this is a forum, and you can see that I came without weapons. those of us who've done this for a little while know the difference between lectures and forums and seminars, and the difference between lectures and forums and seminars. We have not yet mastered how to make all of them the sort of dialogical sessions that they ought to be, but we're working on it. Usually, it is not the habit of those of us who conduct, if you will, forums to start by suggesting topics that ought to be discussed. But here I've succumbed to certain pressures exerted upon my person in the community to get going with the topic. So I thought instead of structuring it, we would have it in a forum-like thing, one so that I didn't have to prepare anything too much, except for a few starters, as they're called, and two, so that those of you who are leaving tomorrow, who did want to have input put in, and to put in input yourself, might have a chance to do so. I'm aware of the volatile nature of this topic, as well as I'm aware of the volatile nature of all topics which have to do with subjecting the folkways and mores of a society and of a system to some rather close scrutiny. Not always to determine what is wrong with it, but to see if there might be some rightness in it, and how this rightness might be used for the edification of, and those of us who deal with all of the problems in a Christian perspective, the edification of the saints of God. And that's the peculiar direction from which I come at it. And while the discussion might be reduced to certain sociological dash anthropological definitions, etc., I, if you don't, will continue to remind us that we are a group of Christian people attempting to get at a very difficult thing. The nature of the group here who will be participating in the forum is quite unlike most groups that talk about sex, racism maybe, but certainly not sex. But I did not have the heart to write under the topic, "Admitted folk will be those who are 21 and over." Basically because I suspect that there are those who are of the alleged young and tender years who might have something to put in that some of us may have forgotten or may never have known, for that matter. So we're not restricting the discussion to age, and I hope that those of us who are over 21 will allow this to be the sort of forum that it ought to be. This is not a defense mechanism with me, but it is a form of put-on. Pauline theology, and it's described by some as the perils of Pauline, suggests in Christ there is neither Jew nor Greek, barbarian or Scythian, bond nor free, and here you can insert things like black nor white. But then he gets to his final point where he says there isn't even male nor female. Well, you could put old nor young in that too. And it's at this point that we've had some difficulty with the Apostle Paul. And so those of us who try hard at not developing rationales to put people down, but developing at least some sort of pattern which evoke thought from people, have suggested that the very fact that the Apostle Paul felt that he had to say there was no differences meant that there was. And what he was trying to get at was how acceptance in these differences, notice I did not say in spite of these differences, is pretty much resting on the person and work of Jesus. So much for that. Would you like for your daughter to marry one? Has been the classic question for the last 400 years, I would suppose, or maybe even longer than that, if one buys what I said this morning, well, not what I said, but what the Bible says about Miriam's hang-up with Moses, then obviously it goes back much farther than that. Miriam was terribly uptight with Moses because he married a black woman. And that's why the Lord had to punish her by afflicting her with a skin disease called leprosy. Now, I'm not going to try and pick out the first case of racial prejudice ever presented in the Bible, but I am going to try and deal with that question. That question is a question which is usually addressed to not so overt racists, by racists who are more overt, in order to disarm them, discombobulate them, if you will, and to reduce their level, their acceptance level, to nil. Would you like your daughter to marry one? And I'm sure that if we are honest around the fire this evening, some of us might want to talk about that. That's one of the things we can talk about. Black folks have got a similar problem now, because with the rise of black consciousness and black awareness, the brothers who, as we say on the streets, talk black and sleep white, leave a little bit to be desired. Now, since we don't have a racially balanced audience, the discussion may have to be a little one-sided on that question, you see, which may mean that y'all will have to say, well, Will and Jim and whoever else is in here that's black, y'all may have to take care of that problem if it is reduced to anti-racist feelings or not, you know, and deal with it as you can. Cancel that part of the discussion then. Let me just pick out a few things which I think are necessary to point out to you. I'd like to start with the movies. From the time that I was big enough to go to a movie, I was surrounded by sounds and pictures of whiteness, and usually the thing that was always trapping me was the white woman. I was told that she was the only desirable creature on the face of the earth, but I couldn't have her. Now that's what the movies tell you. Some of you heard me talk a little bit about Cleopatra, and how even a beautiful black woman like her could be reduced to studies of, first of all, in the old movie, Claudette Colbert's anatomy, and later on, studies of the anatomy of one Elizabeth Taylor. By suggestion, then, the black male, M-A-L-E, just so that we don't get hung up on a semantical thing. One can never be too careful about his words.
Bye-bye.
And I ain't gonna call your name with that one, all right? But y'all know to whom that remark was addressed as he reacted. The black man, then, was possessed, as Eldridge Cleaver presented in his book, Soul on Ice, by a sort of fantasy which caused him to do an awful lot of stupid things. Eldridge, for example, starts one of his chapters, "And I became a rapist. But first of all, I sharpened up my talents. I worked on my technique by raping black girls. And then I went across the tracks and I raped white girls and I didn't get caught because I had practiced so well on black girls," you see. Eldridge sort of betrays the fact that he knew that he would not be bothered by raping black girls, because he had certain examples of how folks get away with raping black women, and how they get away with raping not only black women, but entire continents, if you will. And that's how you account for Eldridge's understanding of how you get away with it. And he worked through and worked out his frustrations on the white woman, as has been the case with a lot of black men. That's something else we might want to explore a little bit. However, I don't know how much time we could afford to spend on that now, because if one reads then the last part of Eldridge's book, it packs a powerful wallet. Kathleen, beautiful black woman, son of a foreign diplomat, preacher, and everything else, walked into his life, and he became more of a man than he was before. Now, I've never raped anybody. I hope I never will. God forbid that I should have to now, especially with a wife like the wife that I got. Y'all have seen her, and I think you know she's something else. And I ain't ashamed to admit that. The Lord has blessed me with a beautiful black woman. I have no desire at this point then to go after any other woman. But in my early years I did, and I think that to a certain extent every black man goes through those changes. A rejection of his own and a pursuit of those who are presented to him as the last word in beauty, femininity, and sexuality. Now, we have had some descriptive adjectives which we have had to use to describe white women. There have been many who have had what we call an African queen complex, and who felt that the only way that white guilt could be absolved, the only way that forgiveness could come, was that they should give themselves sexually to black men. We have cases where white girls have sat around and they have asked, you know, things like, "Now, what can I do to really destroy those old folks of mine? What can I do to get them so uptight that they'll practically be climbing the walls with fear and horror? Hey, Ma, guess who's coming to dinner? And then the sequel to that, obviously, is For Love of Ivy, where Sidney Poitier does not only make it to dinner, but he makes it into the shower and out of the shower. Let your imagination run, folks, with a beautiful girl. Or Jim Brown and, what's her name? Raquel Welch. That's her name.
That's her name.
Jim Brown and Raquel Welch, you know, they may have become household words, you know. They may become that, you know. Everybody wants to know from Jim Brown what it's like to spend that much time in Spain with Raquel Welch. A black man arrives, and he gets there before Richard Burton. or somebody else. It is really sort of hilarious, you know, and incredible. But yet at the same time, the whole question of sex have been the one thing that lends a great deal, and I'm not able to deal with in percentile figures, of negative charge to the whole question of whether human beings ought to relate to human beings or not. Now, I would suppose some of you would want to trot out some other things from your own associations, like, why, that's nothing. You know, Germans couldn't marry Swedes, and Swedes couldn't marry Germans, and they couldn't marry Danes, and Finns wouldn't have anything to do with anyone who married those. And, you know, I would think that those are legitimate arguments, but they do not really form the sort of escape mechanisms that a lot of people would like to form from confronting the crisis in black and white sexually, you see, because there are still arched eyebrows at racially mixed couples. Now, well, that's enough of that. What happens when a black marries a white, either way, girl or boy? Well, obviously they become black. You know, they become black. Check that out. Where are they able to live with the, you know, with the least attention, the least arched eyebrows and negative reactions? Do we have an integrated marriage at this point? Or have we got something other than integration? Is it possible that some whites have finally come to a point where a loving one sort of destroys forever those things which separate, however sociological definitions, I guess, that one would ascribe to this would be that you don't have an integrated family here, you've got a biracial marriage. And this biracial marriage takes on much of the color of the one who obviously has the most color. That's quite obvious at this point. It shows up in children and in other ways. Well, there are certain sexual myths that we can deal with, you know. Most of you know them. A group of competent doctors have proven that the size of the black male penis is larger than that of the white, you know. And this sort of adds to the whole sexual mystique of the black man. Well, you know, doctors have said all this, you know. There are only two of us in the room who know, and we ain't talking. You know, it's really I'm sure that Jim will share this. We get sort of a big charge out of that, you know. I guess everybody needs that sort of ego massage after 460 years of systematic disenfranchisement and dispossession. But we don't need that. I could go into certain details, I think, which would disprove that, but we don't want to get into that either. What we want to do is, I think, discuss maybe some of the things that I've discussed or some things that you might have on your mind that we can speak to. Jim, if you got something you wanted to say real quick before we threw it open to everybody. Yeah.
Well, I think usually when people think of biracial marriages, they always think of a black man and a white woman. I think I was most reminded of this today when the gentleman that was sitting right here said that he worked in integrated schools, and he said that he noticed that most of the black kids that had white mothers also had a problem of relating to black people. And I'd noticed how he didn't say with interracial parents, but he said with white mothers. And I think maybe this is perhaps one of the reasons for the place that the black man has occupied in this country because of the white male.
Yeah, that's true. You know, we've said that the only free people in this society at one point in history were black women and white men. Now it's the other way around, you see. And now black women are still free. Black men have gotten their freedom. White women are getting theirs. And psychoanalysts say that the white male is becoming sexually impotent, physically and mentally. Well, some white male may want to defend, or some white woman may want to defend her husband or her lover at this point, you know, and I think that she's perfectly justified in doing so. But this is true. You got another little thought you want to add in here? By the way, Jim has been...
I brought that up. I didn't follow his... what you were saying there. Maybe you could explain it.
Which part? I mean...
Well, I was thinking of a specific case when I brought this up. And that's... Were you thinking I was thinking generally, or?
Well, that's the way you said it. It was general.
So I was thinking of a specific. I know the reverse can also be true too.
Jim invited all his friends tonight, and he said, y'all want to find out about me, come to the forum. I may even find out something about me that I don't know. Well, it's yours. If you want to ask questions, make statements, you know, go ahead. If you don't, it's all right.
Willie, I have talked to people and know some friends of ours were... professional black people have married into the white, and they more or less have a society of their own. They're not really accepted by either society now. Is this right?
Mm. Well, there are levels of acceptance, and as I indicated before, you know, black folks have still got to deal with, you know, the non-acceptance of racially mixed couples, you know, in the black community. But more often than not, racially mixed couples find their homes in all black communities, more so than they would in all white communities.
I was referring really to the Leimert Park District in
mm-hmm.
Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have...
Or there might be, like most military bases, you know, it's a fantastic amount of intermarriage there, if you will. You'll find these little enclaves of black-white marriages, you know, all over the place, both ways, you know. But more often it's black males and white women. More often. It usually goes that way. The white woman crosses over much more readily than the white man.
Willie, when you came up with little deal about guess who's coming to dinner, you know, with this Sidney Poitier bit, and in the movies, you know, the black male and the white female are becoming, you know, coming together, closer together in a starring type role. And yet on a TV series one time called Takes a Thief, Alexander Mundy was linked up with a black woman. And at the end of the show, you know, they kissed and you left what went on between there and over the imagination again. But I heard that there were larger ramifications from this than from, Jim Brown and what's her name? what would you consider the reason for this?
Yeah, I think that any time a black woman crosses over, there are a certain amount of horrors raised, you know, a certain amount of memories raised in the black community, you know, about the rape of black women, and this is understandable, you know. There's an awful lot of psychological entanglement, you know, wrapped into that sort of thing, and of course. Most black men figure, you know, at this point, that the white community owes us something, and it owes us its most precious jewel, because it took away ours. I'm not attempting to justify that feeling at this point. You know, I'm just making a statement of fact that the reverse of, you know, of black man white woman, you know, to black woman white man. Goes a little bit harder and cuts against the grain of black people at this point, because we're not quite sure of white men. You know, we don't really trust them. We are, however, more inclined to trust white women. And it's not all because of their sex. It has to do with some other attributes which women have, which white women have, which black men have been able to uncover, you see. So that would be one of the reasons. Now there may be some others, you know, but those are some of the things that come to my mind immediately. But you would be surprised, you know, at the number of black women who have white husbands, and we are finding that black men are reacting less and less to that, you know. I can name, you know, lots and lots of them, starting with, you know, the woman who is obviously the patron saint, you know, of the black community and of many white presidents, Miriam Anderson, for example, you know, or the girl who plays Chelsea Brown, but you see the sort of white men that these gals marry are really white men. You know, they are really men, and they're not people on the make. I'll give you, you know, one example of what I'm talking about. The Enterprise stops at our town occasionally. For those of you who are not familiar with the Enterprise, it's a nuclear-powered submarine with quite a number of sailors on it, most of whom are white. Now, we've got a district in Oakland that starts at 7th Street and goes all the way to the estuary. Mm-hmm. And we've also got a district in San Francisco called the Tenderloin. Now, some of y'all are familiar with that. at certain peak hours, certain blocks of the Tenderloin and of the 7th Avenue Strip number about 35 prostitutes per block. You know, you can't see them all, but they're there, you know, if you know where to find them. Huh?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay. Now that's a part of my parish, so I know, see. I walk the streets out there, and it's that part of my ministry that starts around 8 in the evening and ends at 6 or 7 in the morning. That's when some of y'all, you know, get too tired to walk anymore, right?
I wouldn't know.
uh, Well, anyway, most of the prostitutes are black. Most of them are black. And you will find that the sailors, when they get off the Enterprise, they will pass up. They will pass up 10 white girls in order to get to that one lone black girl standing down on the corner. And for that reason, then, all of the white prostitutes have had to leave the block. They just weren't doing any business down there. Now, this was a fantastic study for me as I spent some time with some of the girls there. And they said that all of a sudden, attaining the unattainable, you know, is something that's gone in the other direction now, except that the white men, and they're not all sailors, I can tell you that, some of them are businessmen who are in San Francisco for the week and who take off on Friday. Many of them are church elders, and many of them are Lutheran, you see. Now, there must be some sort of an outlet, and so there again is, for $15, the rape of black feminine pulchritude again, you see. Anybody who visits the Tenderloin can see that almost immediately. So we're saying that, you know, if white men were entirely honest, they would not be duplicating, if you will, the feats of their fathers some years ago by enslaving, if you will, the hearts and minds and the physical persons of those who are prostitutes on the block. Which is, you know, which says something at this point, and I did a little sentence in my Vespers, I think it was the first or second night that I was here, where I said, it's one of the contradictions in this whole thing is that the prostitutes are arrested, but their customers are not. You see. Where is the greatest sin at this point? But that has something, too, to say about the whole sex and racism business. Fire away, anybody. I can't see hands in the balcony or behind us here.
When we talk about biracial marriages, I'm so far focused only on black and white. I would like to hear your point of view of a marriage between black and Indian, American Indian. The question why I ask this is, I met an Indian from Mexico, and he got engaged to a white girl, and this was the starting point that we talked about, biracial marriages and so on. And in this relation, we also talked about the possibility of a marriage between an Indian and an black American, Indian American, black American. And immediately when I mentioned this, he said no. His parents were very much upset when he mentioned that he was going to marry a white girl, but a Negro girl would be completely out of question.
Yeah, right. This is
the point of view of
we can understand this. Of course, my wife is half Cherokee, you know. So they might not have married, but they were friends. you know, did you understand what I just said? Okay. The same difference with the Orientals, too, and other Third World people in the past. Of course, this is starting to diminish somewhat. They would much rather have their kind marry white people than marry blacks, basically because blacks have always fulfilled the lower strata of society. They were practically animals, black things with the semblance of people, so-called animals. And so Other third world people, like the Indian, for example, have been extremely reluctant to increase the agony or double the jeopardy, if you will, by hooking up with a black. And considering, you know, the prior definitions of blacks is perfectly understandable on the part of Orientals as well as on the part of Indian people, or even Africans, you know, marrying the so-called Negroes, practically unheard of, you know. That all has to do with certain myths that had been perpetuated about black people. But that's starting to diminish quite a bit now. And if you visit any college campuses, you'll find a lot of, you'll find more dating, you know, across cultural and ethnic lines inside of the third world than you will between blacks and whites now. At least those campuses where you have, you know, high numbers of third world people. Now, the older folks still may have difficulty accepting that. One of the other things which betrays the whole sexual thing in this country is the way interracial marriages are played up in the press. Ever look at that? Dean Rusk, was it? Dean Rusk's daughter, and that black man, and Adam Powell's son, and that white woman. You know, big splurbs. And so where you find individual people who fall in love with each other and who wish to spend the rest of their lives together, the racist press, which is sort of a thermostat of the latent racism of the country, blows it up way out of proportion and makes a great big deal out of it. Jackie Onassis probably did not get as much coverage in some circles as interracial marriages did.
Will, what's your feeling on the idea of an interracial marriage to the extent where people become brown or olive rather than white versus black?
Well, see, I have no quarrels about that. You know, my skin color is not black. I'm George Wallace's answer. I'm the answer to George Wallace's frustration over the miscegenation question, you see. Because I'm obviously a product of something mixed. It may not have been a mixed marriage, but it certainly was something mixed. You know, I think that's quite obvious. I'm different from blacks, and as are most blacks. You know, even Jim here, you know, has some white blood in his veins somewhere. You can look at him and tell that. You see, maybe by the palm of his hand or something.
This had to be so.
I would suppose that, you know, if we ever, you know, got to a point where our level of acceptance would allow, you know, a sort of Polynesian cultus, it would be kind of groovy, except that we're destroying, you know, the only state which had that.
Yeah. Well, the thing
you
is,
know, that's why the Hawaiian folks are saying now, you know, one day we're going to be strangers in our own land. And it's sort of difficult, you know, to find folks who still have many bloods of many nations running through their veins and find that they are, you know, like accepted too.
I was thinking in terms of the idea.
However, you know, I don't want to suggest interracial marriage as a solution to the whole race problem.
No,
Do you understand that?
No.
I would hardly do that.
I was thinking in terms of the Bible, you know, where they, I've heard it, well, I went to Bob Jones University my first year of college.
Yeah.
I think you're probably familiar with
that. Yeah.
Well, you know, and you hear it so many times, like, well, it's in the Bible, you know, that black stays with black, white stays with white. That's the way, you know, God made the races, and that's the way it should stay. And it seems to me if the color of a man's skin is going to be something that divides man, then, you know, is that according to God's will? Or?
No, it's not. That, you know, that's why I say that we should allow individual people who make those decisions, you know, across ethnic and color lines, to make those decisions and leave them alone. That's what I'm saying to the black community right now, you know. That's what I must say to them. Don't oppress them, you know. or I got to be on their side if you oppress them. That's a personal thing with me, you know. And I think that most black Christians feel that way now. But we don't suggest interracial marriage as a solution to the racial problem. I was listening to a radio talk show once, and a white fellow called in, and the topic was sex and racism. And he says, you know what, how many white folks are there? And he gave the figure. The disc jockey, or the, you know, the man who was doing the talk show gave the figure. He says, how many black folks are there? And he gave that figure, you know. And he says, you know what, I would suggest that we make a law in this country that no blacks could marry blacks, you know, that all blacks must marry whites, and that all whites would marry blacks. And since there are so many of us and so few of them, we would have wiped them out in about 10 years. You see. That's, you know, that's how one would solve the racial problem. But you see, it ain't going to happen that way, you know. Basically, because we are still stuck, if you will, with that little sociological doctrine which says that if you've got 1/10 of 100% black blood in you, you are black, you know. And there are a lot of folks around. There ain't going to be enough prominent funerals in the next 20 years to do away with that myth. So we've got to deal with acceptance, you know, along other lines other than suggesting interracial marriage. All right.
Well, could you maybe talk to the point that interracial couples have to consider some things in order to prepare themselves to cope with society as a biracial marriage? Before they go into it, so that they don't go into it for the reasons that are mythological rather than.
I do this all the time in my counseling sessions, Avis, you know, and usually if a couple wants to marry interracially, they'll find themselves a black priest or a black pastor now, you know. Mm-hmm. They're sort of driven to that, you know, basically because of the not-so-mistakable tones which are coming out of the black community. And I always check for motives, you know. I must do that in order to preserve my community. You know, I must question seriously the motives. And usually the motives are quite pure, if I might use that word, you know, quite honest. There are, you know, honest declarations of love for each other. But then there are cases, you know, and I don't want to enlarge on this because I think that these are, you know, I alluded to that earlier. Black men, you know, who are on the make, we don't deny that, you know. Black men are on the make, and they'll pull out all stops, you know. You don't want to go with me because I'm black. That's why, you know. Now that's a typical cop out, and that man is not a brother. You know, he's not black. He's something else. He's an opportunist, provocateur, enemy agent, if you will, who's destroying the community. However, there are those who see a girl talks with her, is exposed to her, and who falls in love with her. And that you have to deal with. And here is where I say it is as natural for blacks to marry whites as it is for blondes to marry brunettes, or brunettes to marry auburn-haired people, you know, or any other color. Tall people married to short people, skinny people married to fat people, you know, all sorts of physical mismatches going on, see? but then, you know, the physical attributes at this point, you know, take a kind of back seat. We do, however, demand faithfulness to the black condition. We can't get off of that, you know, basically because we've got a community to build. And our mission, quite frankly, is that of Christianizing, humanizing this country before she paganizes the world. We've assumed an awful lot, and we've taken an awful lot upon ourselves at this point, without, however, concocting all sorts of weird messiah complexes while we're doing that, recognizing that we've got white allies. I hope all of y'all.
I have only had one occasion for an interracial marriage, but in speaking to this couple, I have much more confidence in the future of that marriage than a lot of others. And I think we should rid ourselves of the illusion, too, that because a white marries a white, they aren't marrying each other for reasons, mythological reasons, you know.
Like he's able to provide me with all that I need, huh, Norm?
Yeah.
Two cars, two boats, two houses.
And we'll be happy ever after.
Check out his airline.
Yeah.
H-E-I-R, you know. The line. And, you know, see if he's ready.
Yeah.
That's true. I've had a lot of black and white couples, you know, to tell me, you know, man, we got to stay together. We are like forced together because it ain't nobody but us. And we may have, you know, not a subculture, because, you know, I don't like to refer to, you know, emerging cultures as subcultures. We may have a whole new culture developing. That's beautiful, you know. And I don't want to deny anybody that sort of adventuresome spirit. You know, that's what I mean when I talk about forsaking, you know, this all of this comfortableness of certainty, you know, for the ambiguity of change and the uncomfortableness of same, you see. I have a great deal of admiration for that, considering the state of affairs in this nation now. You know, it's racism above all else. So I agree.
I think this couple is much more realistic.
I think you're right. I know you're right.
Hey, Will.
Yeah.
Since sexuality and racism start long before marriage, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about adoption.
Mm-hmm. Well, blacks adopting whites. Is that what you're saying? Whites adopting blacks. What are you? Which way? Both ways?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about whites adopting blacks. We've been, at least I have been, kind of, you know, well, here's where I live under grace with my experiences like this. I haven't met any where it didn't work out. You can picture the white couple standing around, you know, black kids about 14, and the white couple says, "Hey, son, I think it's about time your mother and I told you that you were adopted." That was a joke, Fred. but I think that in this particular area, there may be some bad experiences, you know. It's not widespread enough to determine whether it's bad, you know, experience or not. But where it has happened, you know, it's been really a sort of groovy experience, because I have seen, you know, parents who've adopted third world children, you know, allowing them to be them, be themselves, and not denying them, if you will, experience with their culture. not making them white, but providing them with a simple little thing like proteins, you know, and not all black families can provide their kids with proteins. Not all black families can provide their kids with, you know, with other things that they need, but proteins at this point are the most important ones. My experiences with this sort of adoption, you know, have been like 100% good, you see. However, you know, you don't find too many whites putting up their babies for adoption by blacks, you know, because they still sort of got the feeling that it's going down a notch, you know. There is still that feeling, and you gotta, yeah, you gotta, huh? Not, it's not as widespread. Well, the other one isn't widespread either. Maybe somebody who's more familiar with the adoption agencies in this country can speak to that. But my own experience is that it's not as widespread as the other. It's not as, quote, normal as the other, you know. Which has, and then to benefit of the doubt should be given here at this point, considering the fact that the stuff, you know, which life is made out of, you know, food, clothing, and shelter and stuff usually comes from the white community, along with technical assistance and other things too. But my experience has been, to just, you know, try and shorten up the answer a little bit, is that those white families that have done this, while we don't have enough black psychoanalysts to subject them to the sort of torture that they need to be subjected to, you know, to go through the adoption, and those of you who have adopted know exactly what I'm talking about. It's torture, you know. You know, how often you go to the bathroom, you know, what you know, all of the questions that come at you, you know, which are maybe important, may not be important. Maybe it's because I don't understand them that I take such a dim view of many of them. But they've worked well. Now, blacks have adopted other black babies. Another one of the racist things that happened, if you will, was the whole brown baby thing that came into this country. You know, black people were made to feel guilty that there were brown babies born in Germany, you know. Y'all went over there and y'all got all those German girls pregnant, and they got all those babies, now you gotta adopt them. That's what they said to black people, you see. But one could, you know, never tell, you know, what baby over there was American white, because they all looked alike, you see. So white men were not, you know, blessed with that sort of guilt thing. But, you know, this is when adoptions of racially mixed babies was at its peak, you know, when brown babies from Germany were adopted in this country by black people. Babies of German female. But I would hope that, you know, that black people would be able to find mothers and fathers who were suitable for black children by determining whether or not they had joined the black condition, had become a part of the black condition. I don't want to make it sound as if you're joining church or something.
Yeah,
because
it would seem, though, if you did adopt a black child, that you either would join the black condition or...
Well, yeah. Well, you can ask somebody who's done that. There are one or two people in here if they want to speak on that. Ken, you want to speak? Say something?
He's not
here, but... Uh-oh. Lois, you want to say something?
Well, I thought maybe you
would. Nothing like putting me on the spot. Well, I could say that, well, being somewhat adopted, I can say that any beliefs that I had or felt for my culture, I think were magnified by my parents rather than suppressed. And I feel that the understanding that they had, and even some of the guidance that they had from them not being in contact with black people, well, it was unbelievable.
Is there white people too adopted to, or what?
Yeah.
Well, we feel that, that Jim coming to live with us is one of the greatest things that ever happened in our family. And we just wish that we could have had him sooner. It's just hard to explain how, what a deep family that all of our family has, all of us together. And part of it is because Jim came to live with us. So if anyone were hesitating about adopting a black child, I would certainly say that they should not hesitate, that it could be one of the greatest experiences of their lives.
Well, that would be, I think it would be determined by the mannerism in which they would bring them up. I mean, if they would bring them up with the feeling that that there was no difference between them and other people, and that, I mean, if they would bring them up with this feeling that, well, you know, everyone is the same, and not let them be aware that they are black, then I think they would be committing a sin. Whereas, I mean, if you're going to tell someone, okay, everyone's the same, and here these two girls are, they walk in the all-white school, and everyone's staring at them, every place they go, everything they do. I mean, they're going to think, well, something's different.
Yeah, you see, black people are still not beyond paying the price that it takes, you know, to bring wholeness to this society. And black folks are still not resisting that. I have some questions about all white communities. You know, I've got some serious questions about all white communities. But I think that there might be some method in the madness. You know, like, why are there two of them, you know, instead of one? And I think that this family must understand to a certain extent that there must be more than one, you know. Otherwise, the poor kids would have to talk to themselves, you know. And of course, I don't think that I couldn't go any farther than this, because I don't know the family, you know. The family could be living in that community, but yet way above it. Who knows what discussions take place around the family table, or in the car, or on the way to the park, or in the park, you know. Who knows, you know, where their friends are, you know, sneaking into the community under the cover of night and stuff like this, you see. I know of a couple of cases like this. That's why I'm not as dubious as some might be about that, you see. I think that I know that there are some mothers and fathers who have their little black white mothers and fathers who have their little black children crying vicariously as they sit in front of the color television sets, burn, baby, burn, and pointing out the necessity of that, you see, and explaining the whole process to them, which can be done. Those are not white people, so far as we're concerned, you see. They are not white. They have joined the black condition, or become. I keep saying join. I'm so obsessed with, you know, with immersing all of y'all that I keep talking about join. Baptizing all of, that's what I mean by immersing.
Well,
two
weeks ago, there was a gentleman here who was, I guess, part of Blueprint Agency for adopting children, and he mentioned that most Negro mothers, black mothers, are not wanting their babies to be given to white people, and that they are accepting them themselves, but definitely that there's a great cut in the number that wants them to go to white families.
There's going to be massive withdrawal of black folks from participating in the adoption enterprise if it continues to be what I've just described, enterprise, you see. And that's understandable. Black mothers are becoming, in fact, one black woman says, I think that the number of good white folks are running out real fast in this country, you know, and they're just not adding enough to their numbers daily, you know. Okay, some other questions, comments?
I'd like to revert back to the question about biracial marriages. You mentioned they may be forming their own subculture, but they're usually...
No, I didn't say subculture.
Well, I think somebody may have mentioned that word.
Their own culture, yeah.
Their own society, I guess.
Yeah.
But they're usually accepted by the black community. I was just wondering if you thought this was because we have a choice. I mean, if they would rather be identified with the black community, or imagine they'd run into the problem of the real estate business where people would refuse. This getting into a little different topic here, probably, but imagine this would enter into the picture, would it not? With biracial couples?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are all sorts of problems, you know, associated with that, and you've just described one of them, you know, but like I said, I don't think that, you know, they have as much difficulty in the black community as they do in the white, you know.
Points out one of the difficulties.
This is just one of the difficulties. I don't know how much farther we can press that. But I'd like to ask y'all, you know, all the ladies in the room, how many of you married the guy that lived next door to you? How many hands are in here? Did anybody see any hands? You see any hands, Jim? No, none of you married the guy that lived next door to you? Wow. How many of you married the guy who sat next to you in the first grade? Second grade. Third grade. Fourth grade. Fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth. Huh? How many of you married the guy who sat next to you in college? One, two, three. How many of you married the guy who sat next to you more than once at church on Sunday? One. Come on, sweetheart, was he standing next to you, or was he preaching?
He was singing in the choir.
You were standing next to him?
Singing in the choir.
Singing with him?
I was in front of him.
You were in front of him? You weren't sitting next to him. In front of him, okay. I'll allow that, all right? I better, since it's your what, Norm? Your 19th?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I don't know where you got your husbands, or your, you know, I really don't know where you got your husbands. Because you see, you know, that's been the big question about school desegregation, you know. It's been the big question about biracial housing, you know. You know, those are all the horrors that are raised, aren't they? You know? Hey, wasn't that the question in Bob Jones? Huh? You know, we don't want them in here because they might start marrying our girls, and that would be bad. You know, so we don't want them in here.
That's where they get guns.
And they got guns, that's right, around the campus. I just saw a TV special where they got Tommy guns, no, you know.
Well, they at least they
submachine guns. Yeah, submachine guns or something, I don't know.
Where is it?
Bob Jones University.
Where they live?
Great big school in Greenville, South Carolina. There's another one out in Oklahoma. Billie Jean Hargis has that school, too.
Yeah, they're
good friends. Yeah.
Strom gave the benediction.
Yeah. But 9 times out of 10, one appreciates and one, you know, still has that affinity for his culture. And he will go to it in spite of, you see? And he usually goes somewhere else for his wives and for her husbands. And so, you know, that sort of destroys that myth, I think, a little bit. Martin King used to always say, "We don't want to be your brother-in-law, we just want to be your brother." That's all we want to be. To which some white lady retorts, "Why do we have to marry? Why can't we just be friends?" You see. Well, I don't know how much we proved tonight. I asked Harv to announce that it would be a very, very low-key discussion, and it was. And I'm happy for that. But I hope that we've started at least some of you to thinking about the fact that racism has its white racism. Call a spade here, has its vicious and sinful tentacles into every fabric of our being in this country, including the destruction of the most beautiful, you know, beyond description, one of the most beautiful creations of our father, sex. Now, I could share with you for about 5 minutes some other views that I think I ought to share here, because I am grieved by the anti-Christian puritanical hang-ups which have been released upon those cultures who did not have those hang-ups by missionaries and by others. I was talking with some people earlier about the visit of the Belay Africans to this country. Some of you are familiar with them. And the country, at least some of the towns that they were to play in, even San Francisco, were a bit upset because the women were bare-breasted. And this raises all sorts of horrors of the missionary enterprise of the Christian Church, which did more than suggest that bare-breasted women were in fact lewd and salacious. Cover up your breasts because you're exciting people, you see. And some of us now believe, and this is a part of the new culture that's coming, that the Lord made breasts before he made bras. And that he made the female body before he made girdles. And that these things are terribly restrictive and awful for some women. However, we are just as repulsed by the prostitution of that gift by those who would convert it into a thing of evil or who would make it oppressive. And sexuality, and this is really Elmer Witt's topic and not mine. I can talk about our sexuality, you know, and we've got lots of it, you know. It's called natural rhythm. And we might write trilogies again about the pill's grim progress. Or we may even do a letter, Saint Paul's letter to the Philippians. I don't know. And we're sort of intrigued by all of this. And we are very much aware of the fact that if it were not for the sexuality of black women, this country would be in a horrible state, because most of the DuPonts and the Rockefellers and others, the young ones and some of the old ones, were wet nursed by black mammies. Even George Wallace was. His first experience with whiteness other than his own was the milk that flowed from a black breast. And I would commend to your reading words from some beautiful black sexy women. Women like Miss Tubman and Sojourner Truth and other great soul mothers of the beautiful culture who taught us about sexuality and who taught us about acceptance of same in the midst of the most adverse conditions imaginable. And you white women might do well then to take your cues from that and to start realizing now, and here we are in a position, I think, to define how we see you. Take your cues about what sexuality is and what acceptance is all about. Not from what you are told you are to be, but from what you are. We figure that the asp didn't bite Liz Taylor quick enough, you see. And we figure that that culture, which even invented or discovered, if you will, what beauty was all about in its natural state, has something to offer you. And so what we are pleading for now is to come off of some of your hang-ups created by Lady Clairol and Helena Rubinstein, and I think that's what Ken was trying to get at. When he talked about masks, at least that's a part of it, you know, that's not the beginning and the end of sexuality, but there are some other things which ought to be looked at a little closer than they are these days. And I hope that one of these days we'll be able to coalesce even sexually with y'all. Well, I think I'll stop because there's a course in ichthyology waiting for me starting at 4 o'clock in the morning if the wind is right. Unless there are some questions that are terribly pressing, we'll knock off.